Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. Now in its third season and with a growing focus on the energy transition, I'm delighted to have in our studio Carol and Ellis. Carol, you head up the East Africa region for Schneider Electric. It is such a fascinating organization and it's great to have you in our studio. There's so much to talk about. Thank you for making the time and please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you very much, sir. So my name is Carol Coates, currently heading the Schneider organization in East Africa. Been on this role now for just over 18 months, but I've spent most of my career in the energy space. I'm very excited to be on this podcast and to share some of the work that we're doing in this energy transition era, as well as to also share some of my specific experience in the East Africa region around the energy space. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you for that. Well, why don't we kind of dive in? You know, we speak about the energy transition as though this is something that started recently. And I remember still interviews with the CEO of Schneider Electric, I think back in 2006 or 2007, speaking very coherently about the energy transition, speaking about some of the, not just the global ramifications of it, but in specific regions like Asia and then more recently in Africa. So certainly not a new phenomena. But if I take you back a little bit to help our audiences understand the context, understand what does the energy transition mean in East Africa? What does it mean in an emerging region that is fast growing and changing? Could you give us a bit of the context to this before we dive into specific ramifications, implications and opportunities that it provides?
You know, it's very interesting that you speak about transition. I think when you're talking Africa specifically, I believe the conversation should start from access rather than transition. Because as you know, in sub-Saharan Africa, we are seeing that it's the energy access levels are still way below the acceptable level. So even before we discuss, you know, what is it that we need to talk about from an energy transition perspective, we need to talk about energy access. And I think today, if I look at the transition conversation in East Africa, it's more how do we get more people connected to the grid or have some form of electricity access? And some countries, especially Kenya, have made significant progress to this end. So, for example, if you look at the Kenyan context, statistics are showing that, you know, up to 85% of the population have access to energy, either from the grid or from some form of off-grid solutions, such as solar home systems and the like, which is very different from some other countries that are within the same East Africa that have percentages that are way below 40. I will not mention the specific countries, but I'm sure statistics are out there and you can verify this data. So the first step, I would say, from a transition perspective is to have the access. And with, of course, the drive of most governments to connect people, it brings its own challenges. The challenges of ensuring that the grid can support this kind of people. Also, the reality that most of the populations in Africa live in the rural areas, and therefore it brings challenges in terms of connecting them because they are diverse. So how do you then balance between connecting people to the grid and having them get access? So the emergence of mini grids or off-grid solutions becomes very interesting. And then the other question is, even as you discuss off-grid, how do you still ensure that they are sustainable, that they are commercially viable, and who makes the investment? Because again, remember, the energy poor today are paying a very high premium for energy. To even if you look at people who are paying for, you know, the solar home systems and all the other off-grid solutions, if you look at the cost per kilowatt hour, it's still very high compared to people who get connected to the grid. So these are really the kind of conversations that I would bring to the table as we talk about it from my perspective.
That's so fascinating. You know, when I think about the energy transition, I have to remind myself that it's not a phenomena. It's not a journey that just one type of organization takes. It's not just about the public sector or the private sector. It's not just about those that are on grid versus those that are off grid. It's a conversation which makes us explore and find solutions with others. And because of that, I guess one of the things that the energy transition does, it helps organizations transform themselves. It helps organizations to find themselves, play a different role, and be helpful and be valuable to the broader society in more than one way. And you've just alluded to it when you spoke about access to electricity. Now, when you kind of cast your eye into the future and you think about if we had broad, universal access to electricity, going forward. And I know this is one of the things that certainly is mentioned in SDGs and given a lot of focus internationally. What do you see could the East African regional economy become? How critical is the access to electricity to the kinds of economic shifts, the kind of growth that the region could actually demonstrate? What have you seen from your work?
You know, I will give you an example, my personal example, and I'll tell you, I grew up with no energy access. And what that means is that the time to study as a young person who's in school is limited because it's limited to the daylight. And at night, the quality of light that you use to study means that you cannot study for long. So it's proven. And I think this link, economists can tell you that electricity and economic development are positively correlated. And when you think about the population in East Africa, you're talking more than 200 million people in the broader East Africa region. And if you work with generally adding only 10% of the population to have energy access, you're talking 20 million people having additional energy access and therefore spending their time. And when I talk energy here, I mean electricity. It's just, let's say they'll get 1 or 2 extra hours at night to do something productive. We are not even talking about how they will increase productivity in their day-to-day activities. Let's say the farmers, maybe they will increase their productivity based on having this electricity and many, many other things that people do for economics. So from my own perspective, I would say that increasing access in East Africa will unlock economic development significantly. And I think governments that have already started doing that are seeing that people now will increase the access to information. You start to see the development of tech because then young people have access to energy and therefore they have access to information and therefore they can build businesses or careers in the spaces that would not have been available to them. That's just one example. I mean, we can go on for a whole day discussing what this will do. For me, it will unlock. And I think the focus should be really to ensure that the access is there and then build on the access to really put in place structures to develop certain spaces in the economy to take advantage of this access.
You know, Carol, when I think about a comparative, another example as to where East Africa really leveraged and scaled based on access, you know, I'm thinking about telecommunications. You know, it's a sector we've done a lot of work in and we know intimately well. And I still remember the early days when connectivity became possible, where undersea cables were connecting through the port of Mombasa into Kenya and then into other countries in East Africa. And when you start to connect the dots into the kind of vibrant fintech, to the kind of vibrant software as a service and other technology applications that young East Africans are actually engaged in, to the degree that you see international companies, global corporates, investing in the region from an innovation perspective. It's so interesting to kind of bring it back and say, it all started with access, right? It all started because someone saw the possibility of what could result from, to your point, 200 million people connecting to a basic service. And from everything you describe it, it's a similar type of phenomena. It's the access that triggers the economic development, that unleashes entrepreneurial activity, that gets young East Africans to do things that they couldn't do before. It's such a fascinating topic. And I guess what that kind of leads me to is the role of companies, the role of the private sector in this. And let me ask you, what role do you see private sector organizations playing as they think about, you know, their own sustainability, as they think about the future workforce and how to get East Africans to work and provide, you know, new services and things that we couldn't do before we had sufficient access? What have you seen in that space?
I think if I look at the role of the private sector, I've seen the private sector create solutions to try and close the gap. So we've seen the emergence of new technologies that are affordable, that are also being made available on what we call pay-as-you-go model, which is basically saying, I know you cannot afford to pay for this on one shot. I'm going to give it to you to use it, but pay me on a daily, on a weekly, or even a monthly basis. And this is really, I would say, industry changing. And of course, has taken advantage, to your point, of the emerging fintech. It's no longer emerging. It's actually established fintech space. And more importantly, the M-Pesa platform. So you've seen that this models becoming available and therefore creating a completely new industry country that is employing thousands of people and also providing energy access at the beginning. That's just one way the private sector has done. And these are private companies that have adopted and developed these solutions. And this is a whole industry that developed, I would say, in the last maybe 10 years that did not exist in the past. I think also if you look at coming back to maybe the bigger organizations that are huge consumers of energy, is also then what are they adopting to make sure that they are being more efficient in their consumption so that this energy then can be available for more people, is to say, can we use energy more efficiently? And what do we need to do to use energy more efficiently? And maybe we can talk a little bit about that and some of the ideas and suggestions that we have around how to be more efficient from a private sector perspective. But I think we cannot talk about private sector only without also talking about the role of the utilities in this entire, because it's an ecosystem, and how do you bring all the players together in this transition period.
Let's perhaps talk a little bit about the ecosystem, because it's certainly one that is taking shape. It is one where you have to participate with others and sometimes develop the rules of the game, develop the governance and the way in which the ecosystem itself will behave. So talk to us a little bit about, when you think about the ecosystem in which the energy transition is playing out, private sector, public sector, other types of organizations, what can you point to as success factors? What can you point to the kind of things that have made the ecosystem stronger, more diverse, more opportune for organizations?
So let me just narrow down to the Kenyan context to answer your question, because that is what I'm very familiar with. So if I was to look at the energy from an, let's say, a value chain perspective, starting with the generation, of course, we see the Kenyan grid being very, I would say, largely renewable grid. But we've also seen investments in intermittent sources of generation, such as wind energy as well as solar energy. And this is bringing some additional challenges to stabilization of that grid. So it's giving the challenge to the generation companies as well as the transmission and distribution companies in terms of then how do you prioritize and how do you ensure that your grid remains stable. But if I come, for example, to the utility company, specifically the distribution company, in our case, the Kenya Power, is really then how do you balance the emerging mix of consumers? So in one end, you have the huge power consumers, which are your industries, which of course remain traditionally the largest power consumers, but at the same time you have a huge number of smaller type domestic consumers that are, you know, spending very, I would say, maybe less than $2 a month on their energy bill. And how do you keep the balance of both happy? And how do you ensure that you're billing, that, you know, you're managing the outages and all that? And so when I look at all this ecosystem to really manage the complexity of the additional subscribers to the network, and also the complexity of, you know, having many, many small customers, is really can only be resolved by, you know, having a digital solution, because it becomes then very difficult to operate in the way that you operated, let's say 15 years ago, when you had, you know, maybe only the large industrial subscribers where you could send your crew every place and you resolve the issues. Now you're dealing with a much wider access and maybe you don't have full visibility. So I really would then say digitization becomes an interesting conversation. And I think it's high time really that utilities in this region embraced digitization in the real sense of it. And I know in my early days of my career, 15 years ago, we talked about smart grid. And I think it was a theoretical context at that stage. But now I think it's becoming a reality, and not only that, but a necessity to remain efficient and to also ensure that, you know, both the utilities and also the private companies that use this electricity are really maximizing the efficiencies of the energy available.
Now, you spoke earlier about energy efficiency. You spoke about the role of the customer in helping to manage, you know, supply, demand, balance, and it's essentially in a way create a new form of generation, if it's significant enough. How is that being embraced in East Africa? And to what degree is there scope or potential for energy efficiency to really make a difference to the overall balance of supply and demand?
So that's quite interesting you ask. So I'll tell you, maybe the last 7 years or so, a number of private companies have sort of found a way to do some form of self-generation to supplement what they get from the grid, predominantly to really lower their cost of operation, but also to increase more renewables that go into their operations. So we've seen that trend emerging, and it still continues to emerge. Of course, different business models have emerged in Kenya. So that is on the generation side in terms of supplementing what you get from the grid. But what we've also seen with some of our customers is them wanting to understand where in their process can they bring some additional efficiency. And we've seen a number of customers, for example, just putting additional metering points to sort of really be clear on how do we know which part of our process is not efficient. And some of the customers have implemented, I would say, light monitoring solutions, and quickly they've discovered that, for example, they're running a part of a process when it is empty, and they could easily switch it off, and they save some energy. So some customers have actually, you know, just by implementing very simple solutions, seen a drop in their energy consumption up to even 15%. And this is a very interesting space for us, because there's really, you know, real value for money. We see guys saying, okay, I didn't even know that, you know, because every morning the guy who's reading the meter would go read, and then he would come and read the following morning, but you really have no clue what has been going on during the day. But when you start monitoring the trend throughout the day, you discover, oh, between maybe 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. or 10 p.m., this particular part of the line, there's nothing going on, but my fans or my motors are still running. So I could as well reduce or switch off that part. So these are very interesting insights that we're discovering with some of the manufacturing facilities, especially, and the opportunity really to minimize their energy usage by just being efficient, and not really using energy when it's not required.
That brings me, Carol, to a discussion about leadership. Because in every country we looked at, the energy transition wasn't simply embraced by all at the same time with the same level of insight. You could always find forward-thinking organization. You could always find individuals who've seen the opportunity, who were called anything from crazy to extreme to difficult, until the recognition of how fundamental the energy transition is became apparent to everyone. So when we think about the energy transition, it's not so much or not only about the technology and the kind of solutions, but the kind of leadership that you demonstrate, right? It's the kind of leadership that you demonstrate to others in the ecosystem. Someone has to take the first move. Someone has to trust. Someone has to put a different governance model together or a different way of pricing electricity. So talk to us a little bit about the role of Schneider Electric and perhaps your experience from a leadership perspective. What kind of leadership have you found is necessary for the energy transition really to take hold?
So I guess for people that know Schneider Electric, you know that we are an energy management company, and we are not shy about speaking about our forward thinking in terms of energy efficiency. So in East Africa specifically, we have been very vocal about our role in bringing efficiency to energy base. And you know the Electricity 4.0, where we are saying it is the convergence of electricity and digital. And we are saying, guys, electricity going through copper lines and switching on a bulb is not enough. We need to know what that bulb is doing. We need to know how much of that is being used. And we need to monitor and collect data and understand the trends so that we can take the right decisions. So we've been at the forefront in driving this transition in East Africa. We have worked with some of our partners and customers to build cases. And we are really using the experiences and the cases of customers that have experienced our solutions regarding the efficiency to speak to others. So we are almost saying you're using a testimonial to say, hey, I did this and this were the savings. So it's almost like a real life case. See it, seeing is believing. And we are driving these conversations continuously. And remember, Schneider is an organization that works predominantly with partners, and we are building and owning the space of energy transition. And we are not really apologetic about it. We want to be the shapers in the industry as regards the conversation on energy efficiency. Not only shapers, but we also want to be the people helping people realize their efficiency gains.
Yes. And Carol, if I kind of think of your own experience within your own team, you know, I often find that this kind of transition also raises questions and helps people to step into a new role, even within the organization. I remember a well-known global energy company that we've been working with and that we interviewed the head of innovation for not long ago. And he was sharing with us how, for example, country business units suddenly became more empowered, suddenly were kind of reaching out for their own targets around the energy transition and felt that they could set targets that were beyond what the group has set because they were closer to the context. They could realize it and they developed a confidence around it. So the plan became more than just a master plan by the center. It became, you know, a plan that a country really invested in. That took leadership. That took a different way of having the conversation. And I kind of wonder to what degree, when I think about a global organization like Schneider, works in many, many different countries, what opportunities has that provided for you as an individual leader to do things differently with your team?
So, you know, it's very interesting you asked that question and a very good question. So, you know, Schneider, we pride ourselves as being the most local of a global organization. So even though we have a blueprint from the global team, we deploy it based on the local context. And so from a local perspective, we will prioritize based on, you know, the market trends. We will prioritize based on how we see the opportunity lies. And by the way, the digitization space for us has really generated opportunities, not just for our teams, but also for partners to build new businesses, to also build new capabilities and really new skill sets altogether, because this has not been done before. So while we are leveraging the group in terms of the basics, we are just practically building together on the ground with the partners and testing different models. So as we test, we find the ones that work and we deploy those. Some fail and we abandon, or we pivot and go back and test again. So in my view, being a part of a global team is helping us to sort of reach out to experts when required. But being a local organization is allowing us to have the autonomy to really build a new space altogether and discover it as we build. And of course, as we grow that business, people's careers are taking different turns, and it's just exciting for everyone, especially knowing that in the process, we are saving the climate.
No, absolutely. I'm sure in your work, you get to speak to, I'll call them loosely young people, but this could be young people who start entrepreneurial ventures. They could be 40, 50, 60 years old, or they could be young at heart, or they could be young by age. When you speak to audiences that are participating in energy transition in different ways, perhaps people setting up businesses to serve organizations and the public around energy efficiencies, or you know, people setting up startups to connect with larger organizations and offer solutions in the digitization space, or people just entering the energy industry, which is a fascinating industry, you know, for the first time and thinking, you know, if it isn't just the big oil and gas companies that I need to simply target and look to, the kind of opportunities, the number of opportunities generally becomes much larger. So help me to get a sense of when you have conversations with people who are young to the industry or young to a new venture or a new role that they play in the industry, what is the kind of advice that you offer them? You've been in the industry for quite a few years. You've had an opportunity to both shape and give effect to strategies, you know, as you said, at the local level, not just at the global level, you know, from 60,000 feet, a lot of things look very clear. When you hit the ground, it's somewhat different. What would be your advice? What would be your message for those who are attempting to participate in the energy transition in a new role, in a new space, or maybe just for the first time?
You know, I think energy is a constant for sure in any economy. And it is obviously important for people to note some of the global trends is that the world is becoming more electric. We've seen an emergence of electric vehicles. Maybe Africa is not adopting as fast, but we've seen that coming very strongly. We've of course seen the emergence of what we call prosumers. I mentioned about it earlier, people generating and producing and consuming their electricity at the same time. So as a new entrant, either trying to build a business or a career, I mean, it's really, for me, a growing space that will continue to require skills in different formats. I mean, for energy, really, beyond the generation, it's all about management. How do we manage the resources that we have efficiently? And there comes the opportunity. The opportunity comes in the management of the energy. So how are you ensuring that you're using it efficiently? You're deploying it in the right spaces? How are we converting the traditional sources of energy into more cleaner sources of energy. And really, with the conversation now around climate change, really, we know that energy is contributing 80% of CO2 emissions. How do we then think about together to reduce the CO2 emissions? So from a career, from a business growth perspective, there's no better time to be in the space than now, because a lot of focus is going in, a lot of discussions, a lot of investment, a lot of innovation is happening in this space.
That's fantastic. Carol, it's been such a good conversation. I've really enjoyed this. So many insights. And, you know, I'm sure perhaps at some point in the future, we might ask you to come in and pick up a part of this conversation with us once again. But for now, I just want to say really thank you. Thank you for sharing those insights with our audiences. Thank you for being able to cover in a span of about 30 minutes or so, so much of this energy transition. And we'll certainly be on the lookout and see how this plays out in the East Africa region.
Thank you very much. It was great chatting with you. I enjoyed it as well.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.